Hello and welcome to
the Stoked on Spokes podcast.
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 Wait, like SOS?
Well, it's about bike,
ride, gear, races, community, and so much more.
My name is Curtis White.
My name is Maggie Rochette.
My name is Stephen Hyde.
I'm Caroline Menus.
I'm Dave Heck.
I am Anna McGeely.
This is the Stoked on Spokes podcast. Let's get rolling.
Hello and welcome to the 62nd episode of the Stoked on Spokes podcast. I wanted to say thank you to everyone who participated in the April cycling challenge that we had last month. Four individuals posted every day, and I thoroughly appreciate it. And the winner is Mr. Philip Beal. Today I'm joined by Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania cyclists Jordan Vallela and Chris Mayhew. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Good.
So can you guys please introduce yourself and give me your bicycle background?
All right. Well, I'll go first. My name is Jordan Vallela. I'm from Pittsburgh. I coach for Cycle Smart, and I am the racing tech editor for Bike Rumor. Most of my cycling background started with being a bike messenger in the city and just kind of riding for transportation and fun. Then I started fixing my own bike, working in shops. I just loved tech, and I loved fixing stuff, and I loved old tech, new tech, things to make you faster, things that could, you know, kind of like you could rebuild. After racing a bunch of alley cats in the city, I started joining some local races and cyclocross races and cross practices, coached by Chris Mayhew and the crew in Frick Park. And it was awesome. So then I just started racing bikes, and yeah, the rest has just been history, racing and riding and riding.
Yeah. I'm Chris Mayhew. I've been coaching with JBV Coaching since 2000. It's 1 year older, longer than my son. So 17 years now, whatever year that is, 2006. I've been riding bikes since 14, 15 years old, just riding with the neighborhood friends. And then got my first job in a bike shop at 17 and met a bunch of bike racers there and rode with them a whole bunch. They were amazing. It just really instilled a love of riding bikes in me and kind of the way to do it right. Been riding bikes ever since, been racing ever since. And then raced road a bunch, raced mountain bike. I think in 96 or 97, some really close friends were just like, get in the car, we're going to go do this other thing. And that ended up being cyclocross. I just loved every aspect of cyclocross. I really focused on that for a long, long time. It's kind of where I have my reputation for coaching. Yeah, more riding bikes than racing bikes lately, but still really enjoying bikes for sure. And still coaching.
Do you guys remember how you first met?
I do. So Chris and I worked at a shop together. Right. Chris worked at TRM Cycles, and I worked at Trek of Pittsburgh. Yeah, Chris was a mechanic there, and I was in sales, and it was pretty awesome. We worked together. I remember Chris would analyze the power data. I remember we had that power tap, and yeah. I remember that being in the front, and I was like asking, what was that? Because it was like cutting edge technology. And I remember one of the guys, Mike Henninger, saying like, oh, Chris, we'll analyze this for you. And it makes watts. And it will, you know, and I was like, what is this? It was crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Just working in shops and kind of like, I learned a lot, you know, about cross and about, you know, road racing through Chris and seeing the guys at the shop. Because I was definitely, you know, I was a newbie when I got there. It was back in the day. I can't remember when it was. It was a while back.
And, yeah. I was like, 2006 and seven. And you were the guy with like dreadlocks down your back and like your helmet wouldn't really fit.
Yeah.
And we were like, I don't know, this guy's rad, but like, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, that extra large helmet was clutch in those days.
I remember that.
It was like, yeah, you know, I played in a bunch of punk bands. I was playing in punk bands at the time. You know, I was like, yeah, I might as well, you know, I love bikes, might as well get a job at a shop. I tried it out. I got hit while I was a messenger and I wasn't able to do stuff. So I was like, you know, this shop looks cool. And yeah, that's where I met a ton of friends to this day, you know, still hang out with them. So Trek in Pittsburgh and CRM.
Yeah, that was it.
It was awesome.
So how has this friendship developed over the years?
Yeah, we see each other. I mean, we don't live too far from each other. Before we had kids, we used to ride together a little more. I would always see him at cross practice. Like, Pittsburgh's a really small town at the end of the day. And like, if you do the thing, then like, you kind of know almost everybody that does the thing. So like, we certainly hung out. Obviously, we're coaches together. We know a bunch of the same people. So it's like, maybe not like the best of friends, but like we've always been in each other's circle for sure.
Totally. Cross practices were a big deal. So Chris would host the Tuesday night. It was Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Since I moved from the city, I haven't been able to go to them. But yeah, Tuesday night, like clockwork, man, everybody was there. It was like the dress rehearsal for the weekend. Yeah. So we'd all go there, hang out, talk about the week before, the week after, what we want to do. Yeah, it was great. And then we had those Saturday rides, which were awesome. Just kind of cruising around. And there was always a joke, like there was always a bridge out on the rides that like we never knew. You know, like we'd go on these like excursions and it was awesome because I didn't, you know, I'm a creature of habit. I don't explore far from my area, you know, more like a cat. I kind of go like in my little circles and that's it. And going on the rides with Chris and a bunch of the guys and girls in the city kind of took me out of my comfort zone and, you know, took me in places I usually didn't go. It was awesome.
Those were like proto gravel rides, honestly, like really inspired by Jeremy Powers and his Grand Fundo ride where it was like, let's take road bikes on like 23 or 25C, but let's like do gravel or like, let's see where this road goes. And yeah, sometimes that road doesn't go anywhere, but it's still a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, that was awesome. I love those rides. Those are great. There were so many different people on them. Like, you know, there was road riders, cross riders, mountain riders, and just a diverse crew of people going out and riding. And it was definitely fun.
Yeah.
Definitely a good time.
Cool.
So tell me more about your riding and your racing.
So I started out as a mountain biker. So that's kind of like what I did. Fiercely wanted to be a pro mountain biker. I went out and all my friends were mountain bikers. There was a guy, Travis Saylor, who was close to me, who was super fast. And I'd always try to keep up with him. And this guy, TJ Platt, locally, it was awesome trying to ride with them. And, you know, mountain biking was my first deal. It reminded me of like punk a lot because it was just like, go out in the woods and ride. And, you know, it's a little scary for me, you know, because I was just going as fast as I could. And I got that roller coaster feeling of like, you're probably going to wreck, but probably going to be fun. So just keep doing it. Learning how to race mountain bikes and, you know, kind of, you know, going up the ladder there, I learned to race other bikes. So I started, you know, mountain bike season ended in August, you know, or we had the Month of Mud series locally that went through, but cyclocross kind of pushed me in there too. And so I was like, well, I might as well try this. It's kind of like the same bike I was riding as a messenger. So rode my cross jack and a bunch of cross races and got my butt kicked and wanted to be better. And eventually that led into road racing, which was a whole nother animal to me. So just keep finding new ways to race and ride and explore. Yeah. Now gravel's a thing. So it's like, what the hell? Go for something else.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of the Month of Mud, like, so that's a local race series that's been going on like 40 years, something like that. I don't know.
Long time.
Yeah, it's been going on forever. It's a local legend. It's one of the few things that has managed to go through like generations. It takes place in the fall, which like traditionally would have been the end of the road season. And it's a really neat like Pittsburgh institution because it's like it's all kind of off-road, but it's meant to have everybody show up. It's very low key. It's very low stakes. Nobody's like ultra competitive about it.
No podiums, no nothing.
What's up?
No podiums, no nothing. They wanted to get home before the Steelers game. That's what I was told.
That's a great way to put it. They like literally hand you your prize envelope like as you cross the line. Like there's no, it's no frills. It's amazing. But it's meant to be like, oh, I've never mountain biked. And like, so here's a mountain bike race. It's not that technical. Or I've never done cross, but I only have a mountain bike. Okay, we're going to do a cross course that like you could ride a mountain bike on and not be totally disadvantaged. Or I'm a roadie and I've never done any of this. Cool, just do the beginner class at Month of Mud and like get your feet wet. And it was a really good way to bring like all the communities together in a really low-key environment and just have some fun, honestly. I think that's really been lost is like a series where you just kind of show up, throw down with your friends for a minute, and then all walk away like, you know, it's not, it doesn't take up your life. You don't have to train for it every day of your life. I think it does a huge amount for Pittsburgh cycling.
Totally. It's cool to see how that series went from mountain bike to cyclocross, back to mountain bike. And now it's just like the series is still there and people know it's kind of like an end of the year, you know, it's October. It's awesome. But the series has morphed into whatever people want to ride, you know, like if there's more, you know, like cross energy that year, it goes to cross. If it's, you know, there's some mainstays that are there, you know, Brady's Run and Moraine, these parks near us that are really fun that have been there forever. But, you know, people just know it as an institution. It's been there forever. You know, you can race it as a beginner, you know, a sport and an expert. And the expert class, I mean, it gets feisty, but fun.
Yeah.
Like it's all about, at the end of the day, it's like a great training ride, a hell of a race. And, you know, really it's within like an hour or sometimes, I mean, like 20 minutes from from your home. So it's
yeah, cool. I've ridden to a bunch of them before. That's actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
If you're a dork.
So basically, in a way, Month of Mud is just grassroots cross, right? It's just for the community. Do you get a lot of out-of-towners, or how's that go?
You get regional. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so we live, Pittsburgh is in this Western PA area where we get racers from West Virginia, Ohio, and our area in Pennsylvania. So it's hard to get to the Mid-Atlantic Super Series and the Maverick stuff. It's a farther drive. So for us, we go to the West Virginia Mountain Bike Series, the Wovumba races, or the OMBC series in Ohio. Same with the cross races, Neo Cross and Cap City Cross, the West Virginia stuff, Avra, JR used to put those on. And so we get, people from that pool, but also there's not a lot of mountain bike races going on at that time. So if people are after nationals, people usually hang up the mountain bike, but if you're purebred, I only race mountain bikes, kind of racer, that's it. That series is something you can go to and just go with. There's a huge single speed contingent, which is fun. Yeah. We get a decent amount of people from all around for it, actually, especially in the cross races. Chris used to set up a course for the North Park race, and that one was good. It used to double up with a weekend. So kind of a local, double race weekend. We get people from all around. I mean, cyclocross, if it's happening a weekend that you're available, people drive.
Yeah, we live in a region too where there's not a huge population center. It's not like Cincinnati that's drawing from Indianapolis, Louisville, yeah. Some big population center. But within 2 hours, there's all these little, towns and cities around us. You'll get there's a couple people from Cleveland and there's a couple people from here. And I mean, there's three states, that we can draw from. So it's not a huge turnout, but it's definitely a really mixed crew. And you end up, you're super tight with people from Virginia, West Virginia, and the Cleveland area. Yeah, we get our own little thing going.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This summer in my area, I'm starting a short track mountain bike series.
Nice.
Because it's a bunch of roadies in my area and there's got to be something else. And I go to the shops and they're pumping it up and they're people are really stoked to have something different and something to do and actually to have a series. And, it's funny, coming from Ohio, people are if it's not, OVCX numbers, they're always people are always saying if Cap City is not that important because it's not the 200s, the 300s that OVCX have. And in my opinion, when it comes to any kind of series, as long as the series directors and the race directors are happy with getting a decent amount of people who are having fun and making the series fun, yeah. It doesn't really matter what the numbers are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Series are always kind of, it's a flow, I've seen race series where it's just they kind of goes in and out and it depends. Really, unfortunately, it depends the weather. It depends on, what's going on with other races regionally, nationally around that time. And short track is such a fun, spectator-friendly event. I looked into coming to your series, 20 minutes plus 4 laps, but 4 hours away. I'd love to do it, but I may have to triple up on the races and race everything I can. But it sounds awesome. We used to do short tracks before the West Virginia Mountain Bike Series. One of my colleagues, Jacob Fetty, used to put on, and it was awesome. It was a great way just to get people pumped for the weekend. And started on Saturday. We were this is awesome. And you could kind of get your jitters out there, but also make mistakes and, kind of do fun stuff during the race. If you broke off from the lead group, or let's say you got dropped, it was a good event. And it teaches you, I think, how to finish a race. There's a lot of different, it's kind of like a crit. So that rules. I'm jealous you guys have one of those going. We had one here for a while, but JR had one and it was fun. It was in the summer, but also, it depends on who's pumped about it, and it depends on what's going on at the time. Pittsburgh regionally, right now, I think we got a lot of good gravel races going on. So people have kind of been into gravel. What do you think, Chris? What kind of, we always have the oval, which is our mainstay. But
yeah, the Oval like sucks a lot of oxygen out of the room, I think, at the end of the day. And people are like, really? So the Oval is like, we have like a half mile paved, like semi-banked track. And it's amazing. It's a great resource to have. It's a public park, but we have a permit to use it. I haven't been there in years. The cycling community has a permit to use it exclusively on Tuesday, Wednesday nights. We used to do some stuff on Friday nights too. It's a great resource. It ends up being the kind of the only thing. Like, it kind of ends up being the only thing. And I think sucks some of the oxygen out of like, oh, it'd be cool to do like another midweek or midweekend, you know, like a short track event or something like that. Cause people like want to race the Oval and then do their long rides on the weekend. And that's kind of your schedule. And there's only 100 of us. So it'd be hard to do like something else on top of that.
Yeah, we used to do a hammer ride on Wednesdays at North Park. It's like a local park, and all the mountain bikers would end up going to that, and you'd have to split duty to be like, okay, maybe I'll go do the hammer ride this day, and then I'll do the Oval next week. And you know, because the Oval's fun. I mean, we'll get 50 racers in the A's, and you know, it's a blast. And since there's not, you know, some of the races aren't technical, mostly it's just kind of a banked, and you just kind of keep going left. You know, it's fun. You can do a lot of team tactics, a lot of, you know, you can kind of sit in if you're not feeling great. It's a fun thing to have, and we're lucky to have it, but also it can become the only thing, you know, because it's not too far, and you could definitely ride to that.
That's what I learned from Cap City. Used to have a short track series. I used to go down to Louisville also for their short track series, and I learned a lot before I got ready to put this up this summer. And the one thing I learned was nobody likes to race short track in the middle of July in the evenings because it's miserable.
That's a tough call in general.
So my big,
it's like early season cross, it's rough.
My thing is where first race starts at 8:45 and everyone's hopefully done by 12:20.
Nice.
Keep it simple.
Yeah,
avoid the heat wave. I got some people, they were like, oh, there's only two kids races. I said, yeah, there's two kids races. You know where else you would go for short track? There might be one, or there might be a kids race that's integrated into the beginners. So I said, we got five races. I love that the fourth race, we're doing a relay race when the expert's done, a four lap relay race, kind of like cross. And it's perfect because the intermediates have a chance because the experts are hopefully gassed out.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a little, you got to level the playing field a little
bit. Relay races are awesome.
So, yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, they did a relay race to DCCX this year. It was awesome. It was after the elite race and I was totally gassed, and I entered with some friends. Like I kind of like what brought on a team with some friends of mine, and it was awesome. It was like one lap, just all out, and you're totally smoked. But there's like, you know, people are, you know, it was tactical too, kind of like the world's race, you know, but in the end it was fun because you're just kind of rolling around, you know, and it's the end of the day. So if you raced, you had a chance to dial in your lines and do stuff, and you never know what's going to happen. You could flat, you could have, you know, something, whatever. It's just a fun time. So yeah, relays are good.
The one thing I learned from Cap City and Louisville was it was always the same course. And I love that for this, it's four different courses. It's two venues. The one thing I love about short track is if you have a decent sized venue, it doesn't take up the entire venue really. So, you know, you play on one side 1 week, you play on the other side the next week. And at the end of the day, just people want something different than the same thing over and over again. Because I will say four weeks in a row of the same track at Cap City got kind of old, especially when you're trying to get into that expert level and you're also trying not to, you know, pass out because the heat's so crazy at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh yeah, I can imagine that for sure.
Yeah, that's funny. The only I did one short track in Louisville. We were actually on vacation. I was like, honey, can I please go do this real quick? And it was what you said, it was like 95 degrees. It was like peak urban heat at like 6:30. It's one of the highest whoop scores I've ever gotten, only because like your heart rate doesn't ever drop in that kind of heat. And then like she was just pouring, it's 20 minutes and she's pouring water over me at the end. It was like one of the most exhausting things I've ever done for 20 minutes in my life. It was whatever. It was wild. It was great. I'm glad I did it. But it was like, it was hard. It felt every bit as bad as an hour cross race, you know?
Yeah. But the one thing I like about the fact that I'm doing it all in the morning is I'm actually making the times longer. So the beginners are 25, the intermediates are 35, the experts are 45, because I'm hoping the heat's going to be more controllable so I can actually, you know, give people a reason to hopefully travel a little longer if the time's a little bit longer too.
Yeah. Yeah. This was, I mean, I get it. Like it's their local thing and they can ride to it. It's super well done, but it was absolute peak, like humidity, urban heat, all the factors. It was makes for a good story now. Shout out to Brian Siegel for that one.
I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about a Pittsburgh staple. Black Friday, every day, every year, it's, is it the Dirty 13? What is the, it's the
Dirty Dozen?
Yes, Dirty Dozen. Dirty so Dozen. Talk more about the ride that happens the day after Thanksgiving in Pittsburgh.
Used to happen the day after Thanksgiving. That's like old school, air quotes. They've moved it to what, like the second week in October now or something?
Yeah, it's because it got so huge. You know, I mean, it used to be kind of like, I mean, it was real big. So now it's a little more organized in the way that there's a race portion of it that, like, you know, there's a race wave, and then there's another wave that's actually, you know, more of like a we can call it party pace. Like people are, you can't really party pace the Dirty Dozen. I mean, they're hills, you know, like big steep hills. So yeah, there's a lot of effort, you know. And then there's just other waves for completion because it's becoming like so popular. It's almost in a way the like a marathon. People want to be able to like say they've completed it, and it's a long day.
And completing it is a real accomplishment. Like getting through that is
100%. I think that was one of the big reasons they shortened it, because like, you know, it's unlike a race, it's not like continually happening. So you just, you know, someone will blow a whistle, you roll up the hills, then the points are tallied, and then you kind of wait around for everybody to finish. And I think they moved that front group, the like, you know, racer, you know, or faster paced group there, so there isn't as much downtime. Because if it's raining or really, really, really cold, it could be terrible to stand around and get the jelly legs just kind of waiting.
I've done it even like, so the format is you leave from an area, you do 13 of the steepest hills. There's always the debate about like, should this be in the event? And there's actually this hill over here that should be in the event, but not in the event. Anyways, they kind of have like their 13 hills that are always the same and largely have been. But people go out and do it solo, or they do training rides. We're like, okay, we're going to do the first three, or we're going to do the first six. And I've done the event with a small group, or, you know, I've done it with five people, and it still takes all day. It doesn't matter how quick and efficient you think you're being, like seven people, it still takes the same amount of time as it does to do 300 people. And we're talking basically averaging like two hills an hour. So like 13 hills, you're going to do two an hour, and it doesn't matter. And you're not really going that far. It's like a 55 mile event. Each hill takes anywhere between 1 and 5 minutes, but there's just something about the event. Like you just can't make it go any faster. But Jordan, to your point, we were, so like when it started, it was like eight people, right? Eight, nine people. It was just like buddies, like a couple of friends. And then like Steve Cummings got in on it, and we were like, whoa, dude, like, what is it like? And then like words started to spread. And then like, again, right around the time that I knew Jordan, because that's when my son was born. So we were home like those Thanksgivings, and I was like, I'll do it. And it was like, I think it was like 100 people. And then the next year it was like 150 people. And I remember sitting there with Steve-O the next year. I'm like, how many people do you think are going to show up? And it was like 300. And that was like a 3-year thing. And now it's like probably 300 to 400 toe the line. And I think not everybody finishes. It's a big day. It's super fun. It's, yeah. Oh, I was going to say one of our friends showed up. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, since there's no racing between the hills, you know, so it's kind of like, it's not like an all out TT, you know, each hill is timed, and it's kind of like, you know, more casual pace in between them. And yeah, you can get as much recovery every time as you need in a.
Yeah, I mean, you can speak to it more than me, but it's like reverse enduro, right? Like you just soft pedal the stuff in between and nail the hills.
Yeah.
We had a friend. We had a friend that showed up 1 year, and it was like 40, I think. You know, so like cold, but not super cold. And he was dressed like bare minimum, like knee warmers, arm warmers, and we're like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, I mean, it's a road race, like, you know, like this is what you wear. And we're like, dude, you're gonna die. And sure enough, because you stand around for like 20 minutes at the top of each hill, like he was dying. And Steve and I are wearing jackets and heavy gloves and tights and stuff, and just like throwing it in the car as the day goes on. So it's a very unique event for sure.
Yeah, totally. Well, around that time, there was the Dirt Rag Punk Bike Enduro, which was kind of like the same weekend. So for work, for me, it was like, you know, you had to sit there, and the mountain bikers and the roadies would be like, I'm doing the Dirty Dozen, you can take off for, you know, Punk Bike or whatever. So like, we'd each have our days that we were doing. And, you know, most of those people would go to, yeah, it's a small city, we'd each go to, you know, the same one. And Punk Bike was more of a happening. It wasn't a race, but it was kind of a race, and it was put on my Dirt Rag, and it was fun. It was in these, you know, woods out by Fox Chapel near our area the dirt rag was in. And it was the same thing, you know, people showed up and it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And it wasn't a race. There was no podiums. It was just more or less like it went around in the woods and there were time segments and people would race, but like they'd tally points and you would get like little spoke card kind of deals. But if you noticed when you were riding, you saw like they had these little guys they called punks. They were like these laminated giant spoke cards and they'd hide them in the woods. And that would kind of like, that would bring you to the front of the stage. Like you would, it was like 20 points or something. It was awesome. So that was a big deal, especially with like, you know, the messenger friends, shop friends, people like that. Like it was just a great event, but you were out there all day again because you were, yeah, they had a keg hidden in the woods. There was a lot of fun things happening at that time. Yeah, it was good, you know, but once again, it just kind of got too big. There's a lot going on. It's hard to manage, you know, you know, have these events and they're kind of just like handshake high five entries. And, you know, pretty soon it's like, it's an actual legit event. So they're hard to handle, but that's a great one. Definitely a great one.
That was so good. That was happening when I first moved to town and like, I didn't know, I was just like, I'm new, I'm going to just do all the things. And like, I did it for, I think, 2 years in a row. And it was like super fun and just like kind of weird, but not, yeah, I don't know. Totally. Yeah, it was really good. It was the opposite of like a road event where you're like, where's the podium and what place did I get? It was like, there was none of that. It was really refreshing. They had like an uphill event and like I was winning the uphill event. And then a dude was like the follow van that had the keg in it, like drove past me and there was a guy hanging from the wheel well as he like rolled past me. And then they got like about 100 meters from the finish and they just like drifted the van into a snowdrift on the side and like peeled the guy off. And I was like, I don't know what's happening, but like, I'm kind of into this. It was a good introduction.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. My favorite event was the up down. So you went and you climbed up a hill, like almost yes. cyclocross style with your bike yes. and you ran to the top and you had to turn around and go down as fast as you can. And it was brutal. Chris from Fit Bikes in Pittsburgh would win that most of the time because it was just really? Handling and just, it was all gusto, man. It was hard, you know, well, you just kind of had to just let it sail. And, I was not good at letting it sail like that. Cause it was just like the trails were moto trails, you know? So they were all kind of wrapped out and super steep, super, you know, big brake bumps, and the brake bumps were filled in with lots of leaves. So you think you were going to like, you know, smooth sail it and you'd endo or just kind of like nose wheelie down the whole thing. It was fun. It was definitely fun. It felt like you were out there covering miles and miles of trails, but really you were just in a very tiny, tiny area, just meandering.
That's a perfect
It felt like forever.
Yeah. You're just following
it was fun.
Yeah. Just following motocross trails and like probably 5 miles, 10 miles, you know, but like all day woods adventure. It was good. It was really good.
With the rise of gravel and a lot of, like you were saying, large attendance, does it make sense for some event organizers to cap a race at a specific number so it doesn't get too uncontrollable?
They cap the oval and they have to. There's just too many people. Like there's just, you got a half mile oval. There's only so many places you can put that number of bodies. Sometimes you got to cap an event, man. Honestly, cyclocross is not fun with 150 people, to be really frank about it. I don't like doing it. It's too many.
I agree. Yeah, you miss a pedal. It's like, you know, war. Like you're going through and there's just bodies and people and it's too much. I think, you know, unfortunately, we don't have that problem locally. We definitely, I think JR had some with the Hilly Billy, you know, one of the infamous races in our area was just awesome. You know, it got to a point where it was just, there were so many people and it was hard to control and make sure everybody was safe. There's a race called the Whiskey Rebellion Sweetwater Bikes puts on. It's a really good race. And it started as a ride, which I think most like successful kind of like gravel events, they start as rides and then like, all right, let's just do this fast. And then became a race. They're starting to reach the point where it's like, it's a big day. People are going there. They had like a 200K one year. So I think the more that gravel, depending on the identity of the race and like what it wants to be, as far as like, is it going to be like a 200K slog, or is it going to be more of like an efficient kind of gravel day where you're out and kind of riding and having fun during the day? Like, I think that's going to self-select kind of like if it needs a cap or not. Like that, was it the Road Apple Roubaix? Have you ever done that one, Chris? It's in Ohio.
Yeah.
It's It's like that. It's totally not a race, but it's totally a race. Like everybody goes out, you know, races it, but they're like, it's not a race. But it's really fun. You know, it's cordial. People stop at stop signs and do, you know, I mean, it's good. But like when the attack zones that aren't really attack zones, it's just kind of like the rail trail in the end, or if you want to roll off the front, which one guy did this year, it's fun. And it's a different kind of atmosphere. You know, it's the mullet style where it's like, you know, race in the front, fast in the front, and kind of party in the back. So yeah, I think it all depends what you're doing and where your race is held, you know, like at the Oval, it's maximum capacity, man. 50 people take a lot of space up in a small track like that. But if you're going long distance and you have the people to take care of the racers and make sure everybody's safe and no one gets lost, it's up to the director.
Really. Yeah. I think that like when it's your community and it's your people and it's people that you personally know, like I have your number in my phone, like you can do a handshake event or a kind of like low key show and go. But once it gets to the point that like, maybe I don't, you know, like I don't necessarily know who you are. Like, and that's cool. Welcome to the club. But like, I don't know you, you know, once you start getting out into that, and the more that you get, the less it's a handshake, and the more it needs to be like a very clear agreement, and you probably need to charge a little bit more. And you may need to cap it at some point. Cross practice. When I ran it, you know, when it was getting into 40, 50 people, like I got a little weird every once in a while, you know, with like, how'd you even find out about us? I'm cool with it. Welcome to the club.
Yeah. Sometimes I remember having starts. We'd have like three or four rows. Remember that for like start practice? And it was like, holy crap.
Yeah. And then
it was like our local cross practice was big.
Yeah. And then it got kind of like, we had some janky starts, you know, like you break a couple of chains or whatever. And you're like, all right, now we need to go to two groups. Cause like, I don't know everybody here, you know? So we need to like make it smaller again, you know, in its own way. So even that's kind of capping it. Instead of just a mass start, let's do two groups and, you know, go back to just having two rows, you know, or three rows of two groups of three rows, whatever. Yeah. I think you have to cap it once you start, you know, once it starts getting popular at some point, you know?
Yeah, because then it becomes a safety issue. You know, you just don't want people to get hurt. You don't want people like, and you break a chain with two rows of people, you know, someone goes behind you or around you and that's fine. But break a chain with five rows, someone's plowing into you, you know, with their head down. They're getting hurt, you're getting hurt. And so I think, definitely, you know, once it comes safety-wise, you know, you get a lot of people sending down a gravel road or something, and you know, 20 people is a lot different than 70, because you fall, you know, or blow a tire or something. And then 20 people trying to get around you is one thing, but 70 people just plowing down the road, a big plume of dust around, you know, it's a totally different atmosphere. So I think safety is the biggest thing.
Yeah. We would get to like three rows of starts at Cap City practice in Columbus. And it got to the point that we were like, do your starts, but understand this is not a race. This is a practice.
Yeah.
So don't try to sprint from third row to the top of a hill. Just don't. You know,
that's a good way to
play your, see how your lines play out. See how the openings happen. If you're in second or third row, go from there. But also realize that you're not trying to kill someone, and you're, you know, trying to just get practice in for when you do actually race, which is hard for some people.
We're all trying to race this weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, right. Totally. My experience though is that any event that has a pre-race or pre-event speech goes 100% better. Like, set the tone, keep a heavy hand on the tiller, so somebody is steering the boat and it's not just like a free-for-all. Like, that's the sign that an event is going to go well. And if there's not a pre-race speech, it may or may not be, you know, depends.
Yeah, my last two races I've ran at Carter Park in Cincinnati, I firmly believe that it's really important, I think, for the race director, before every race goes off, just to say hi and thank you for coming. And little things like that. My first race there was like real feel 80 degrees. So the last four races, we had ice water in the pits. And I was happy I was able to work with the officials and actually care about that, because that was the biggest concern. It wasn't, I felt like I personally should be obligated to take a little bit of responsibility and care that people don't, you know, get heat stroke or get sent to an emergency room, because I've seen races where it's happened before.
Yeah.
I've been at a race where halfway through I overheated and had cold chills the second half of the cross race. And I was miserable, yelling at my friends to give me a blanket when I finished, which was weird in an 85 degree day. But, you know.
Yeah. I was at that Rochester where it was kind of like where Gabby Duren had an issue, and it was, you know, we were all kind of glad that she spoke up about it because it was really hot in that race. That was the first course for the Rochester series. And for that, you know, park, it was a Euclid park, and it was a mountain bike race. I loved it because it was just like big hills everywhere, and the elite race would kind of blow apart. But as it got more popular and the weather, you know, it could have been cold. I mean, we'd been there when it was like, you know, kind of leg warmer weather. But then also when it was super hot, it was deadly hot, like so hot that, I mean, there was no breeze because you're going uphill, you know, most of the time. And it was rough. So they were squirting people with hoses and stuff in the race. And you got to care about the racers because, you know, a lot of them, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, I'd say for most of them, it's not their job. You know, they're going to a job, you know, during the week. So you want to make sure people are safe, no one gets hurt. And overheating's something that doesn't, you know, once it happens, you're just kind of, you're cracked. And when you're in that shivering and the hot, you know, kind of zone, that's way too much. Yeah, that's like, you want to keep the EMTs, you know, out of it.
Yeah, there's a reason. Yeah. There's a reason why USAC requires that if you're not under 5 miles away from an emergency room or a hospital, that you do have someone on hand who has first aid training, just in case.
Totally.
Yeah, interesting. I didn't know that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good rule.
I mean, I saw it happen at Charm City before too. Chris, you probably remember those, you know, when it was like in the early, it would like, mm-hmm. it went from Rochester to Charm City, and those weekends were deadly hot, you know, and like the old course of Charm City, it was the year that Worlds was in Louisville, and there was a whole bunch of Europeans there. It was like, you know, the fields were dense, they were super fast, everybody was going as hard as possible. And I just remember seeing people just like, you know, overheating. You know, yeah. You just couldn't go anymore. You're not drinking water on the bike at all. You know, that was, you didn't see, you know, there wasn't water bottle hand ups or water bottles on the bike. Like that just wasn't a thought at the time, or at least I wasn't thinking of it. Yeah, it's a serious deal. And you're seeing more and more cyclocross racers have water. You know, we saw Curtis take a gel in the middle of nationals, you know, and now like whether it's a thing or not, I'm noticing it more and more, people taking gels and nutrition on, because, you know, cyclocross is a long day. If you're just not drinking or eating, you know, you're going super hard and that could all catch up with you. You know, a gel at the line, you wait there for like, you know, 5 minutes for the race to start. Yeah. And then you haven't eaten or drank anything and you're cracked.
At some point, does having like nutrition in your bottle, is that a game changer or is that more just necessary in days like that?
For the road, it's really becoming a thing. Those guys are consuming so much more calories at the end of races, which is like a small part of why Paris-Roubaix theoretically was faster, is just that those guys aren't like kind of bonked when they're finishing because they're consuming so many calories per hour because they're drinking it down. I think we'll see a little bit of that come to cyclocross. It's always been a little weird balance of like, how do I do that? But now that liquid calories, sorry, I'm nerding out. This is my an area that I enjoy. Now that we have liquid calories, it'd be really great to slam like 200 calories in a bottle halfway through a cross race. Like that would be a huge difference, because like an hour is like right on the limit of what your body's capable of storing in a lot of ways in terms of glycogen and liquid. So if you could alter that even just a few percent, like it would be a really, really big difference. And to Jordan's point earlier, part of the reason like it's maybe a little different every year, or like I didn't think about it, was like some years it's illegal, and then some years it's this weird rule about how do I get a bottle, and then sometimes it's this rule, or sometimes it gets interpreted differently, like on the line by, you know, I've watched officials go down the line. It's like nobody can have a bottle, and you're like, but, and they're like, no bottles today, and you're like, all right, well that wasn't what I planned on, but we're gonna go with that. Yeah. So it always changes every year. It's not super consistent on like how do I get, can I get it in the pit? Can I get it on a spare bike? Can I carry it with me? Can my spare bike have a bottle? Like that's not ultra consistent in America across the year.
Yeah, I think especially with what we're seeing with like, you know, bioenergetics, nutritional science and stuff like that, they're showing like, you know, it's a thing. Whether you take a bottle and swish water around your mouth, because when you're in that heat and you have like dust in your mouth, you know, getting some water in there is, you know, awesome. But also, getting those gels, like the, you know, like the SIS or Everett. You remember those, Chris? They were always a drink bag.
But, yeah.
They were like, it just tastes like flat cola. And it wasn't a gel that you ate in a way that you had to you know, like it was super thick. It was like a, you know, and it just went in, you know? And so I think the way that nutritional, you know, supplements are growing and they're becoming a little bit more easy to get down without water, I think that's going to be a game changer.
Like yeah.
I was at Sea Otter over the weekend and I was talking to Curtis White, Keegan Swenson, and a few people from the elite field. I was like, what were you guys eating? And they're like, gels, pretty much the whole time, gels. And that was at the XL because it was so hard. You know, like in a cross race, you do have the start finish rate, hopefully is like nice and easy where you can get something down. If you're going hard and you're going at these races where it's kind of like every couple seconds, there's a turn, getting something like Clif Bar blocks or whatever is hard. And you're going so intensely that like something like that could wreck your stomach. So yeah, gels are, yeah, but that's a hard one. You got to train your gut to, I mean, that's a lot of gels and that's going to, I don't know who's who's going to be able to do that, but yeah, I think it could be a game changer at least to get a little extra.
They've come a long way, though. I mean, from the days of like like Intervid and some other stuff that was like kind of janky, and you were definitely going to pay for it if you slammed like 8 gels
or a power bar. Do the whole power bar during, just fold it up like in the.
I grew up on those. And those were always smart. So bad, like indescribably bad on taste, texture, how they felt when you got them down. Like, that's all we had. Yeah. That's all we had. It was that or Kerry Fig Newton. But yeah, like some of the stuff
that infiltrated hockey too.
What's up?
Oh, yeah. Scratch. Oh, I was going to say that infiltrated hockey too. Like, I grew up playing elite hockey, elite level hockey, and the power bar like mantra was like, this is, I always think of like the power sauce bars from The Simpsons, you know, like how they were like, you could do anything. You could do anything with this bar. You know, my dad being like, this is a power bar. And I just remember eating it and just being like, oh my gosh. You know, like, but the nutrients and the vitamins and all this stuff. But I think where Chris was going was like the stuff from scratch and the new nutritional stuff out there is like not only palatable, it's like really good. Like, like the, you know, there's food that like, you know, if you were in a pinch, like I know the Honey Stinger came out with some, these like little rolled up kind of like nut bar things, and they're really good. And I ate some off the bike the other day and I was like, you can't, this is bike food, dude. You know, like, but yeah, you're not going to find me eating a power bar. You know, I haven't had one in a long time, but you know, they were never really my jam.
Yeah. Food has come so far. It's cool. It's neat to see it swing back to you from like, we didn't have food. So we just carried like bananas and Fig Newtons and like, it got really, really, really artificial for a long time and got like worse. The artificial got worse and worse and worse and worse. And like now we're swinging it around like good artificial, but also like making like rice cakes or bringing some of your own like more real, but still prepackaged is like, it's pretty ideal. Everything about bikes in the last 5 to 10 years, amazing. It's better than we could have ever dreamed of. The bikes are better. The equipment's better. The clothing's better. The food is better. The riding is better. Like it's such a golden age to be on a bike. I can't get over how nice it is.
Yeah. I'll second that. I mean, funny thing about the food is one time I was on a ride, I was like, oh, it's a long ride. I should probably buy a candy bar. And I like looked at my pack, you know, and I was like, oh, I have this nutritional bar. And it wasn't a nutritional bar. It was pretty much the equivalent of the candy bar, but like a bike equivalent of that candy bar. And I was like, I'm just going to buy the candy bar. Like it was the same thing. But what Chris was saying, like, yeah, I just reviewed a Ventum NS1 for Bike Rumor. And, you know, we did a video on it and that bike fits 35s and it's an aero road bike.
Nice.
Someone raced it. One of the Ventum athletes raced it at BWR and I think they fit 40s on it, but that was like very questionable. I think like 35s is where they cut it off, but bikes are very capable now. And with disc brakes and just, you know, the whole, like, you know, no one's trying to like you have the aero bikes. It's like, this is a performance bike. You have the, you know, the 404s, the big, you know, 1080s, the big wheels, like these are performance wheels. But then I think cycling is more about getting people on the bike. You know, that's what I saw one of the questions was, you know, kind of what are you into right now? What gets you stoked? And, you know, being at Sea Otter this past weekend, you know, we were out there from Tuesday to Sunday and we went out and we did a century. We were lucky to have some time beforehand. We did a century with some of the people from Enduro Bearings and Alchemy Bikes. Everybody was just happy that the event was happening. You know, like COVID is kind of like just, you know, like we're like, wow, I remember last year when we were all, you know, wearing masks and scared, you know, we were all doing elbow bumps. And this year it just felt like, wow, like this is happening. Everybody was happy to ride bikes, no matter what kind they were. And just, you know, that a lot of, you know, my friends and people in the industry, you know, were moving away from racing and going more into just pleasurable riding. And you discover so much more just hitting a weekend ride that's like long with your friends. You're not worried about training or power or data. You're just like, look at that road, you know, where's that go? And I think that's like a big thing right now, especially, you know, like the time is precious to be with those people. So yeah, that was big. You know, just I think the industry is going in a good direction as far as that's concerned.
I agree.
Jordan, you talked a little bit about Bike Rumor. Is there anything more you want to mention about that? And what about also about Cycle Smart?
Cycle Smart's been, you know, it's been great. We have our camp every year. It's the first week of August out in East Hampton. And, you know, we have, you know, everybody comes out. It's kind of like the, you know, the pre-race event for us. You know, you get to go there with all your equipment and kind of sort out the details, see if, you know, if you're doing base and you get in there and you get to kind of check your fitness and stuff. Cross season has been very good for us, especially in the last couple of years. You know, with COVID, it was rough, you know, but like Adam Meyerson was saying, he said, we're going to see like a reverb, you know, or like a little bit of back action from gravel. And I think we're starting to see that. I think, you know, unfortunately, the gravel bikes are being sold as cross bikes now, which is what it is. You know, there's not a lot of purebred cross bikes out there anymore, but it's nice because you can take that bike and do many different things with it. So if you could take your cross bike, go to a gravel race, take a gravel race or a gravel bike, go to a cross race. You know, we've been seeing a lot of good uptick in cyclocross participation, especially in the clinics. But we saw each other at Rochester this year. You know, we were parked right next to each other, me and Adam, and we were remarking on how there was a ton of people there and there was a lot of stoke for cross. Like it was, you know, you kind of don't know what the events are going to be like, you know, when you first start the season out. And I think the bigger races are becoming even bigger. Unfortunately, I think some of the local races are getting a little smaller because people want to get to these bigger events. But yeah, hopefully this year it's going to be much of the same, you know, with getting a lot going on for cyclocross and getting more people into it, because it is such a spectator friendly sport and it's such a family driven sport. The only thing that bumps me out of the drives. I don't like driving long distances and stuff. Or me and Chris would drive. Those carpools were great. We'd have like a bunch of us in the car, bikes everywhere. And that was it, man. That was in the Volvo.
I missed that Volvo, dude. Like five dudes in a Volvo with like nine bikes or whatever we were doing. It wasn't that bad, but it was definitely a lot.
Full toolkit in the back. Yeah.
That's part of the like a local thing for Pittsburgh is like we're every good series is 4 hours away. So like, okay, cool, we're blessed with OVCX and NEOCX and Capcross and New England and DC, but like none of those are really close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The local scene is coming back and it's hard because you know, as you know, when we were racing elites and things like that every weekend, like you want to go to the big stuff, but also you want to make sure that your local stuff isn't you know, going the wayside. So, you know, a lot of our local, you know, like the people that would go to the bigger races, myself, you know, Mike Mahalik, Jordan Snyder, you know, Ryan Poppel, some of these guys that we would, you know, race with now, we'd, you know, we're all, you know, dads and parents and stuff. And so we're going to the local series and we're starting to see a swell there, you know, because people are, you know, someone took it on, Johnny Mack, one of our local guys who gets things done. He's like, I'm going to rock it. And so it's finding its way right now. And I think it's going to get better. It's hard though, because someone has to take that charge up and that's a tough ask.
Big ask.
I'll say personally, I'm not willing to take that. I'm not starting a race series. That is tough. You know, I mean, that's tough. It's a tall ask for anybody. Yeah. So hopefully we're going to see an uptick in some of our local stuff in Pittsburgh. We've been getting a draw. And I know locally we had people coming in because when COVID was happening, that was one of the only race series that was kind of doing it. You know, they had the protocols they did and We were getting people from even from the Massachusetts area to come out to at least race. Hopefully in the next, you know, couple of years, we're going to see things going. I mean, my kid's starting to do some races. He raced last year, my oldest. So
what do they know?
It's kind of nuts.
How old are your kids?
Nino is 8 and Rafi's 5. So he raced cross at Rochester.
Nice.
Raccoon. The first,
great venue.
The first yeah. cross, the only cross race that matters. It's been in how long has that race been going on?
I mean, since I've been here, 20 years, over 20 years.
It's fantastic. So that's one of the races, you know, it's one of the best venues around as far as like just, you know, history and fun, and the crowds are always, you know, I mean, it's always a good time. So we have
and versatility. And I think
it's going to get better.
Versatility yeah. too. You can run a million different courses there. Like, it's not as big as Harbin Park, but I would say it's pretty analogous to Harbin Park, where it's like you have a lot of good features. You can run, you know, whatever course you want to run there. It's going to be fun. It's going to be good. It's definitely the local equivalent of Harbin Park, I think.
Yeah, this year they ran it all through this like hiking trails in the back, and it was like torrential downpour. It was like World Cup style. Like, it was just surfing all these ruts. It was good. It was fun. Cool. And you know, everybody was there, you know, so I think the more that, you know, the elite racers and the people that are traveling to events, I think the more that is going to be, unfortunately, a burden for them. I think they're going to dive into the local scene, you know, their local scene, and help like pump it up again, you know, because want those races to be there. It's a bummer when I think of like, you know, like hopefully my kids are going to race. I want to make sure there's a scene for them. And so that means I got to start being a little more active locally.
Chris, is there anything you want to mention about your coaching and your love of clinics?
Yeah, the coaching's been really good. I definitely saw kind of a lull during COVID, which I'm completely comfortable with. COVID was a really good reset, I think, for everybody. And I think some people stepped back from racing, and that's great. I think that's fine. We don't all have to race bikes. I think, you know, as long as the people that I know are happy, I'm happy with that. And maybe they seen a lot of people get into weightlifting. Some people just ride more and maybe dial back on the racing a little bit. As long as my friends are happy and active, I don't really care necessarily, like, or not even my friends, the people around me. As long as they're happy, I'm happy that they're happy, and that's great. Whatever form of physical fitness that takes. Clinics will always be good. It's funny to watch them just like, I could almost set my clock by it. I'm already dealing with two this week, and I'm sure we'll talk about some more later on. I really like them. I just like bringing it to the people. I like being face to face, and I like being sometimes literally hands on with people and kind of making some tweaks. I think one thing that I really enjoy as a coach that you get to see in, you know, I could do it as a remote coach or whatever, but like as a hands on coach, the thing that brings me the most joy in life, and it's neat to see in an hour and a half, is you get somebody shows up at a clinic and they've never done this before, and they're not even sure how to do it, and they don't think they can do it. And I'm like, just give me an hour. And then, you know, at the end of that hour, they're doing the thing, right? And to watch that, like, I want you to believe in yourself as much as I believe in you. And it just give me an hour and I'm going to get you there. So I really enjoy that aspect of hands-on, like, coaching clinics and being there with somebody. It's kind of punk rock. You don't really need a whole lot. I need maybe 100 meters of grass and let's make it happen. So I've done them for money, but I've also, you know, I get friends. That's always my favorite too, is I just get texts. Hey man, can you show me and my friend how to do cyclocross? Yes, absolutely. I'll give you 30, 45 minutes of my time and let's just go do this thing so you can figure out how to do it yourself. So they'll come. I don't ever worry about it. They're just kind of a natural part of my life. And I just try and keep that shingle out. Like, hey, if you want a clinic, I'll do a clinic. And I definitely have a really good reputation in Pittsburgh for doing clinics.
The Pittsburgh clinic, when is that usually? Because that was like our kickoff locally. You know, like that was usually every year we had that.
I usually try and wait for Month of Mud and WPCX to come out and then schedule like a couple of weeks before that. When I was running cyclocross practice, I would back it up a couple of weeks before that. So I wasn't like competing with myself.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's gotten harder too a little bit. The season is really, really expanded. So like you're racing in Labor Day, whereas it used to be like, let me start thinking about cross in Labor Day. And now it's like, no, man, that's like,
yeah,
we're already doing the thing on Labor Day. I just try and schedule around WPCX. Yeah. Again, you know, we were talking earlier about field limits. Like sometimes I wish there were like season limits a little bit.
Yeah.
Like we discovered going to like the second week of January just didn't work in America, which I respect, but like I wish on the front end we still, you know, brought that back a little bit. I don't know. I just wait for WPCX to publish their schedule and then try and not conflict with that and go from there. And I think there's a non-women and non-binary clinic coming up too that I'm not a part of this year, but I know that's coming up. So like, it's nice to have to schedule around another clinic and not overstep them. So I need to find out their date too.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
I like to see stuff, you know, pop up that you didn't even know about, you know, like you're like, hey, this is going on. You're like, whoa, that's rad. You know, we have like new teams popping up in our area that like,
yeah,
it's awesome. So, you know, people are doing it, you know, especially in our scene. We have the Frigid Bitch team that's, you know, they're rocking. There's a whole bunch of people involved in that and they're taking it. They're doing all the driving, getting in the van and just rolling, you know?
So, I know. I love it. They're so like you were talking about like the Volvo and all that, like, they're posting photos from gravel races like on their Instagram. And like, oh my God, that looks like Pittsburgh Cyclocross from 10 years ago, where we just got in somebody's car and strapped all the bikes to it. And we just went and did the thing. And that's like, it's kind of how bike racing should be. Like, you can't get it all from a Reddit form. Like, you need to go do the thing and you need to know somebody who knows about the thing and knows how to get to the thing and just get in their car and go do it. And it's going to change your life.
Yeah. Seeing that stoke for it, like, makes me stoked. You know,
because
sometimes you get burnt out, you know, and like that inspiration makes you want to do more, makes you want to do better. But also once, you know, like start raising your hand for stuff, you know, you're like, I want to be involved. How can I do stuff? It's cool. Yeah, definitely.
What do you think about Mountain Bike Nationals coming to Pennsylvania finally?
Well, I've wrecked on that course quite a few times, once with a head injury. And it's a rad course. It's going to be epic. So Mountain Bike Nationals were there in like 2013, I want to say.
Yeah.
Possibly. It was the same course. States was there. And there's a race upcoming there on June 4th. Mid-Atlantic Super Series is doing a race out there.
Nice.
I'm pumped. That's a killer course. It's a lot of steep climbs, like, you know, like ski slope style climbs mixed in with very technical rock features. So I think it's going to be good. I'm excited. It's not at elevation. You know, I'm pumped that we get a draw. You know, I'm getting a lot of cyclocross athletes of mine that are asking about it because it's in, you know, our area as far as like, it's definitely not close to Pittsburgh. I think my Boston and whoever clients are actually closer to it than myself. It's going to be fun. I did the pro short track there years ago and it was gnarly, you know, like the whole thing is fun. It's just it's an excellent venue. And there's a village there, kind of like Wisp-like, you know, or excuse me, not Wisp, like Snowshoe. There's a, you know, a nice little place where people can stay. The course is definitely, it's definitely intense. It's definitely pushes the limits of, you know, it's a national championship worthy course. But I also think it'll showcase Pennsylvania mountain biking for what it is. You know, we have great mountain biking out here, great trails, and they're challenging. And it's going to bring new racers to the forefront. I think it's going to be different as far as like who's going to be in the front. I mean, I think Blevins and, you know, those men and women are going to be in the front, but I'd like to see a mix up, you know, never know.
What is currently getting you stoked on bicycles? I know.
Well, for me, it's got to be community. So I think right now I lean on my community in the cycling industry and just riding. You know, I'm not playing in a punk band anymore or heavy metal bands or any of that. And so there was a big part of my life where that was just like, you know, I was with a band, I was on tour, I was wherever. And you have that community that you're with. And, you know, to not be with that is tough. And in the cycling community, it's always there, it seems. There's someone to go to a race with, someone to ride with. And I've seen it most recently when I've been, you know, not going to, you know, the big races or trying to go and do all these pro races. Just being with my friends riding bikes, no matter if it's looking for, you know, KOMs or just kind of just going out and looking for fun roads and stuff like that. That's been what's had me stoked the most lately, community. And then also seeing my kids ride and being out with them and seeing like that second, you know, that next level, like, you know, my kid, he's got these pre-velo bikes in the basement and he loves it. And, they gave us some pedals at Sea Otter. I was like, dude, you got to get these pedals on your bike. And he was fumbling around, you know, had all the wrenches out and got them on. And it was cool. Like I'm feeling like, you know, I'm stoked for the future. You know, after, you know, when you finally hang up you know, your tubulars, whatever, from racing, and you kind of want to just like re-enter, you know, the bike community as, you know, like a recreational rider. I'm stoked to see like all the stuff that's available out there, whether it's riding gravel or doing Grand Fondos or hell, I mean, even e-bikes are fun. They're very, very fun. Especially the mountain bikes. Holy crap, they're fun. But that's what's got me stoked lately.
Yeah, I'm sort of with Jordan. And I think I said it kind of earlier, like everything is awesome. The food's awesome. The bikes are awesome. The clothing is amazing. Clothing is so good these days. That's my jam, and it's so good. I will say, like, my little niche interest that has really especially kept me alive through COVID. That was a bad, poor choice of words, but really kept me riding through COVID. There's a website called wanderer.earth. It pulls all your data from Strava, and it'll show you all the roads you've ridden, and then it highlights all the roads that you haven't ridden. And particularly in Pittsburgh, where we just have a spider map of unplanned, redundant roads, and there's six different ways to get anywhere. It's amazing to think like, oh, I've never been there, or where does that go? Or, oh, wait, this road connects that road, but I haven't done that road, even though I've done these other two roads. It always gets me out on the bike. You know, if I can just chase down a new road that I haven't ridden before and kind of check that off the box, check that off the map, planning rides around like, oh, we haven't done this like huge loop here. Let's go, you know, drive a few minutes and do that. Yeah, wander.earth has been amazing and has made me, helped me do so many miles over the last few years. I've really enjoyed it. So free plug for wander.earth, which I have no association with.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for coming on today. Any last
words?
Thank you.
I think Jordan and I both wish we had waited till the 69th podcast, but we're going to have to give that to somebody else.
Oh, that would have been good. I didn't even hear it. Yeah, that would have been, I would have gotten a lot better. I know friends would have shared that one.
Missed opportunity.
So, yeah.
We'll come on for the 420.
Somebody in before.
We'll come for the 420.
That's a good one.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Stoked on Spokes podcast. If you enjoyed it, please like, subscribe, rate us, and tell your friends about it. Check out our Patreon page where you can get a lot more bonus content. All full unedited videos, all after banter where things get crazy sometimes, and early previews for the next episode. It's all available for only $3 a month. And follow our Instagram and Facebook to stay up to date on all the things we are working on. Until next time, just keep rolling.